This is WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Here's Jaron, first pitch. Durant swings, and he skies one. Right field and struck well. Wallner looks up. It is gone! To the upper deck at Target Field. Jaron Duran unloads for the second day in a row. A tape measure shot, and it's 8-1 Red Sox in the sixth.
Ladies and gentlemen, fans, that was the play of the game brought to you by our friends at Nissan. You deserve a car that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com. After struggling to come up with a victory with a rain-altered ninth inning the other night with Jordan Hicks having to warm up not once but twice in a game that was very winnable, your Boston Red Sox still take 2 of 3 from the Minnesota Twins. Today's game, and it really wasn't even this close, a final of 13-1, as you heard on the WEEI Red Sox radio network with Mike Monaco and Will Fleming on the call. That, of course, follows last night's 8-5 win for the Red Sox. So they win 21-6. No extra point for Minnesota over the last two games. Still, that gives them 2 out of 3 wins. And as we make our way into WEEI Afternoons here with your old pal Nick Fitzy Stevens alongside Big Teddy Johnson in the ballgame himself, Dan Ballgame, Brian Frazoco behind the glass and bringing all that sass, I would like to remind you, the audience, that the MLB trade deadline is but a day away, and as our guy Ted Johnson told us a few weeks ago, if the Red Sox were able to complete their 12-game gauntlet leading up to the trade deadline at least 6-6, then he would be convinced that this needed to be a buyer's market and that they should invest and buy in on the team. And not that math has always been my strongest suit, Dan Ball, but how did those Boston Red Sox that we love so much do over those 12 games?
Well, exactly that, as a matter of fact. And they kind of did it in a way that should give fans a little bit of hope about what this team is. Are they the best team in the league? No, but they weren't that, other than that 10-game winning streak, they weren't that at any point this season. But what they proved is that they can hang with and save for a couple of bad innings, compete with some of the better teams, the division leaders in baseball, Ted, and they can beat the brakes off of some of the teams that they should be beating in Major League Baseball. And so for me, that's a 6-6 record, and that's kind of the takeaways that I was hoping for.
Yeah, look, I mean, I wanted them to be 6-6 going in, considering who they were playing. I mean, they played three of the top division leaders in the National League coming out of the All-Star break. And so I wanted them, you know, I would have felt good on a team that was going into the All-Star break with a 10-winning streak, to kind of finish the next 12 games before the trade deadline at 6-6. And that's exactly what they did. And there's, you know, some of the other indicators that would tell you that they should be absolutely be buyers is what Dan and I were talking about before we came on, Fitzy, is just basically what Dan just said, that, you know, they beat the bag out of the bad teams, and they compete and split with the really good teams. They have a very good home record. And then also, to me, something that jumps out, even though their bullpen has let them down a little bit recently, they have a top, you know, 8 bullpen in the major leagues, as well as something we just recently we were just talking about, Dan and I, right before we came on, was the Baseball Reference now has them at a 68.8% chance of making the playoffs. I mean, a month ago that was under 30, and right now they are, you know, basically 70% chance of making the playoffs. When you have those kind of odds and the team with this kind of momentum, Fitzy, to me, if they don't do something of some significance in the next 24 hours, you're going to have a very, very, very disappointed fan base.
68.8% likelihood of the Red Sox making the playoffs. Go ahead and round that up, Ted. That's 69%.
Yeah. There you go.
That's nice. Pretty nice. I like to hear it. Yes, you are listening to WEEI Afternoons, everyone. It's a truncated, abbreviated post-Red Sox edition of your favorite Boston sports afternoon show. We are with you until 6 p.m., at which point we will throw the baton and flash grenade into the room of the Christian Arcan Show, and he'll have you rocking and rolling tonight as well. You guys know the number, 617-779-7937, if you want to text at us or give us a call and join the conversation. We will be talking some Red Sox. We'll talk some trade deadline. We'll, of course, get into day 7 of Pat's Camp 2025 and our pal Mego, who has been part of the Six Rings WEEI Patriots coverage team, was down there today. She'll be calling in at 5:30 today with a training camp report. So 6-6 they go. Okay, time to buy in. With less than 24 hours to go, obviously it's going to be a feverish, if not frenetic, dash to the trade deadline to check in on how many trades the Red Sox have made and what they've done so far. We throw it now to the trade deadline desk with Dan Ball. Dan, how many trades have the Red Sox made?
Fitzy, fantastic question. I'm glad you asked. Thank you so much for joining us here on the EEI trade desk. We'll hopefully be busy tomorrow, but today they have done absolutely nothing. Now, what we have heard, we've heard a lot of rumors. We've heard a lot of interest Kings-related related stuff the last 24, 48 hours.
God, talk about going Christmas shopping on December 24th at 3 p.m. You had all year, Sox.
And the one report, Fitzy, that kind of marries up with that is that the Red Sox in their front office has been in stealth mode. That's how it was described last night, how a rival executive stealth said mode. That they haven't heard from Craig Breslow or the Red Sox really on anything to this point in the trade deadline. So the positive spin, Ted, is that they're doing their due diligence and they wanted to then after the team, you know, finish their series, take stock of exactly where they are and then be aggressive in the 24 hours that follows. The negative is everybody in the American League around you is making their trades, and the Red Sox are still at the starting gate right now.
And it's funny, Fitzy, if you listen to Will Fleming and Mike Monaco kind of before they signed off, I mean, they were talking as if it's a foregone conclusion that they are the Red Sox are going to make a deal. I mean, you hear
they're
Will
talking
Fleming,
as if it was already done.
I mean, he goes, oh, it's going to be, I mean, they were saying things like, it's going to be a great flight. I can't wait. This is going to be fun. They're going to be buyers. I mean, I'm like,
didn't I also hear Will Fleming, Ted, excuse me, didn't I hear him say, like, if it, in my estimation or my guess is it's going to, the team is going to look significantly different?
Yeah. I mean, those are all
those
like
are, those are big
I
mean, words from a big voice
for him
on
to
a big
say
baseball
that
team.
For a guy that's the connected that close to the team is, I mean, if they don't do something, I mean, partly because of kind of the vernacular they've been using for the last month too, you know, that being Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow, they have they've had us all thinking, and they have Will Fleming, the voice of the Red Sox, pretty much guaranteeing that they are going to do something here in the next 24 hours that is significant and big. And so I don't know. I mean, it just feels like at times ticking away. But when you listen to those guys, it feels as if something big is coming.
All right. Well, thank you, Ted. Very appreciate that very much. We throw it now to the Fenway Frustration Desk with our own Ted Johnson. Ted, what is your level of anxiety or angst right now as to there being 24 hours or less until the trade deadline? I know you said if they don't make any moves, that you think that there will be, I won't say riots in the streets outside of Fenway, but an incredibly frustrated fan base. Where are you? Are you comfortable in what you heard today on the broadcast and what you think Breslow and Cora and company are going to pull off? Or do you think that they're going to look at the way the Red Sox, coming out of that stretch, 6-6, once again, a lot of winnable one-run games that they blew, but that's how the 2025 Red Sox roll. Do you think that they're only going to make minor adjustments and say, hey, we're pretty happy with the
man,
team we have?
You know, there's a lot, again, there's a lot of indicators that would say that they're going to do something. Just maybe kind of the as active as they were before the season. They did things I think a lot of us didn't think they would. You know, bringing in Bregman, for example, you know, trading for Crochet. We did not think they would. Did you ever think they would have the you know, the raisins to trade Rafi Devers? I didn't. And so they've done things, and just the way in which they talk and are acting is in a way, I feel like they kind of are flexing. And so you don't flex unless you got something to back it up, right? And so I just look, Alex Cora is going to go in there and he's going to tell them, look, guys, if you don't do something, you know what's going to happen in this clubhouse? You've seen it before. They have. John Henry has seen what that locker room does when they don't do something at the trade down. You talk about suck your thumbs and feel sorry for yourself. I was down in Houston covering the Astros when Bregman was there, when the Astros wouldn't do something at the trade deadline, and it was such a palpable kind of just bratty, like, you know, yeah, if you're not going to, you know, buy for us, then, you know, we're not going to try kind of thing. And that's the one thing, that dynamic I worry about, you guys, is that attitude going in the tank if they don't do something.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And this team is, because I think it's just because of the youth, Fitzy, they are extremely momentum driven. You saw today's a perfect
great
example
point
of what happens,
yep,
when they're good. If it's going good, if you're getting Roman Anthony leading off, and by the way, he's been untouchable as the leadoff hitter of the Red Sox.
Real quick, side note to your note, Dan, and let me just grab the conch shell real quick.
Yes.
But there must have been something going on. Not to say that some of the litany of excuses or rationale we get from Alex Cora with his weekly interviews with WEI Afternoons is all smoke and mirrors, and not to say that it's all valid as well, but there had to have been something going on. He must not have been feeling well or himself, because the Roman Anthony that came out of the gate post All-Star break versus the guy right now that is almost impossible to get out, night and day. This kid is growing up so fast in front of our eyes, it's absurd. What a stud.
Well, that the unique thing about this situation too, and you're absolutely right, especially during Chicago, there was that one game where he was playing left field and then they switched him and Yoshida because he was under the weather. So it seemed like some of that first road trip, he definitely was playing at less than 100%. He was almost exclusively a leadoff hitter in Worcester this year. I remember looking at those lineups, it'd be Anthony, Meyer, and then basically nobody who covered the Woo Sox cared about the rest of the lineup. Mm-hmm. Because it was those two and then the rest. So Fitzy, I kind of feel like their version of eased him into Major League Baseball as the, you know, four hitter, then the three hitter, then the two hitter. This guy has been groomed to be a number one hitter for the Boston Red Sox, and the way that he puts pressure on and sets up Bregman and then sets up Jarren Duran, Fitzy.
Yeah.
I mean, the turnaround for Duran has been eye-opening. That's a .299 hitter in the month of July right now.
Someone, as the great Dan Patrick used to say, is currently
on fuego.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the Jarren Duran making a case for himself. Don't you trade me. Don't you dare. I'm just now finally unlocking 2024 Jarren Duran, the 2025 edition. And so he goes. And of course, we were told by the great St. Bregman in spring training that so Trevor Story goes, so goes this offense. Yeah. And the sky will not even be the limit. And of course, it's another day where Trevor goes yad and the Red Sox offense pops off for a 13th spot. Let's look quickly, guys. Not at the 10-game winning streak heading to the All-Star break, or even just these 12 games. Let's just look at the last couple of games. Let's look at the Minnesota series, if you will, or if you want to go Dodgers and Minnesota series. I'd like to look just maybe especially first at the last couple of games. Giolito, good start last night. And yes, I know the Twins are not the 2001 Oakland A's, but you have a great start from Giolito last night. Ups and downs in the bullpen. My guy Whitlock looks good once again. Why he didn't close out the game Monday night with the rain delay and everything else and Jordan Hicks was forced to make that appearance, I have no idea, but we live in the now. We don't worry about the past. And then today, 13 runs with everyone. You get a hit. You get a hit. Four guys going yard. But more importantly, Brian Bayo, who we found out and they said during the broadcast is much better. Deo Bayo is like night and day. It's unbelievable how much better he is during the daytime. Two quality starts in a row. Back to six innings or more, one run or less. Giolito looks good. Bayo looks good. Do you think the way that they played, taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers and 2 of 3 from the Twins, will convince Red Sox ownership and brass and Craig Breslow, the Brezbot, that it's more minor and cosmetic needs as opposed to significant, like, oh my God, I can't believe they got that guy to add to the lineup. And did you see the pitcher they traded for? I'm kind of thinking that it's not going to be as massive as we heard during the broadcast.
I worry that you're exactly right, and I worry that that was going to be the case regardless of the result.
Yeah.
That's what I worry about.
Regardless
of the result, just because I've picked up on quite the trend that this leadership group is quite adept at posturing. They know exactly what the narrative is that they want to have out there, and they know what time of year they want it out there. It's relatively significant that all this stuff leading into the trade deadline, oh, we're going to buy, you know, leading into the All-Star break, you have that huge homestand, you get people all buying in, the Red Sox are playing well, Fenway Park is packed, and then coming out of it, you have a series against the Dodgers, you know, the traveling circus of Major League Baseball that you want people in the stands, and I just worry that what we were told, no matter what, was not necessarily going about being aggressive and all that kind of stuff was never going to marry up with the fact that they were actually going to do it, because I can't shake, Ted, the phrase that I read in that passing story, organizational efficiency. I worry that was going to be the edict that they were following, regardless of if they went 12-0 or 0-12.
Yeah, that's nerds that have taken over your organization. That's how it is. I mean, seriously, like that if we are efficient, we justify our jobs.
Yep, absolutely.
That's all that is. It's, you know what? It's winning isn't their main concern. Being efficient is what they're graded on.
No dollar and cent that's unaccounted for is how I take that phrase.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I don't know which way they're going. It just feels like all the evidence would suggest they're going to do something. But would anybody be surprised if they didn't do much of it? They'll do something, just minor, just to kind of do something. But you know, I think of the Red Sox, I think of the Yankees, I think of the Dodgers, the Blue Bloods, and haven't both the Dodgers and the Yankees made trades already to improve mm-hmm. their teams?
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them already have. And so, I judge the Red Sox behavior a lot of times on how those two organizations conduct business. And both of them, of course, have already made tweaks to their roster in which they think is going to improve. So, and yet the Red Sox haven't. So we'll see.
617-779-7937. If you want to jump in on the conversation, do you believe that the Boston Red Sox have a couple of significant moves up their sleeves in advance of the trade deadline, which, of course, is tomorrow, July 31st? Do you think organizational efficiency, as Dan Ball likes to remind us, will take over and be the operative phrase of the day in how they handle the trade deadline? Or does anybody have any idea what Breslow and Kennedy and Henry and Cora and company are going to do? I have a feeling that days like this, guys, when Jaron Duran pops off and looks the part of a superstar, are going to, even though you got Yoshida going yard and Yoshida's bat finally waking up, you have to remind yourself once again, it is the Twins. But I don't think that a day like that is going to give them the comfort that they would look for to trade a guy like Duran. Like, if I had to bet right now, if we were using an app or at the Parimutuel window and I was betting on who they would hold on to and who would probably be a likely candidate, Dan, I don't see Duran getting moved. And I know there have been the stories leading up, Red Sox more likely than not to trade Duran or break up the outfield depth right now, which I think is good. I'd rather they just empty the farm system and give these guys the reinforcements that they need, as opposed to possibly upsetting the chemistry on a team that seems to really, really, really like each other and have all the right vibes. They just need a little more depth right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting to the point where I'm with you. I think if AJ Preller and the Padres specifically come back with an offer that you can't refuse, so to speak, then I'm still listening for that. But I wanted to make this one point on Duran as well. The fact that the last couple weeks, he's now got a 5 or 6 game hit streak. He's the power's back, all that kind of stuff. It looks like either directly or indirectly he's responding to the many rumors that are going on around him by playing his ass off and trying to say, I want to remain a member of the Red Sox. And I say, good for him. That's what I want to see. If you're kind of being kicked out of town and you've already been moved out of center field, you've been moved out of your leadoff spot, mm-hmm. you're kind of being shown the door without being officially shown the door by your franchise, and you respond by saying, no, blank all that. I want to be here. I want to be a part of this. I'm about to show you what you're going to lose if you do trade me, Ted. Good for him. That's exactly the kind of response I want to see from a guy on my favorite team when he hears that he might be headed out of town.
Excellent point. I wonder if, maybe the best thing that happened to Jaron Duran is Roman Anthony. In the sense that you had, it just didn't feel like you had any options at the leadoff, spot.
Yeah.
Before Roman Anthony came to the big club, and now that he's proven he can do it, I just think the more you can take pressure off of Jaron Duran, just the way he's wired mentally, the better he'll perform. And I just think being able to move back in the lineup in that three spot has just taken a little bit of pressure off of him, and now he's playing like he did last year, which he wasn't for most of the better part of the first part of the season. I think partly because he never felt comfortable being in that leadoff role there, Fitzy.
Yeah, sorry. No, I'm with you. And as you've pointed out time and again, Ted, when you have a comfortable Jaron Duran that doesn't have the pressure on him, like you were just saying, that frees him up to use that freakish athletic ability of his.
Yep.
And the hustle and the heart have never been in question. That's undeniable. We know Jaren Duran cares. We know Jaren Duran's been through a lot. We know Jaren Duran wants to win and wants to remain with the Red Sox. But now that his talent is shining through, now that he's popping off a little bit, you got to ride that wave. Don't give anyone else a chance to steal that sunshine. Like, you absolutely need to see what you can do with a hot hitting Jaren Duran, because they're 59-51. Side note, Dan Ball, 33-19 to get to 92-70, so we can update the tote board. Thank you very much. You have to see what you can do. You haven't had a healthy Bregman and a productive Duran and a red-hot Roman Anthony all in the lineup together at the same, with a positive Masataka Yoshida as well. Like, this offense may be turning the best corner it possibly can, so give him a little extra. Give him a push. Give him a nudge. Kick him in the ass on the way out the door right now and make some trades. And Red Sox Nation is speaking up at 617-779-7937. Before we go to the break, let's grab a quick call. Let's kick things off today with Paul in New Hampshire. Paul, welcome to the show, big guy.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, so this is the part where you tell us what's on your mind.
You make this big trade, but you have to know that if you don't give up Duran, the only players these teams want are Anthony, Meyer, and Campbell. And if you don't give up one of those three, you're not going to get Diddley. Secondly, I was wondering what Anthony thinks that Campbell signs the $60 million contract and he doesn't have anything other than the bare minimum. What do you think about that? That's my comment for the day.
Thank you very much, Paul. We appreciate you chiming in. His line is open if you guys want to jump in. I don't think Roman Anthony's thinking too much about Christian Campbell signing a deal that could pay him anywhere between 60-some-odd and $100 million because he's making money and he's playing in AAA right now, and that doesn't affect the price of milk or how it tastes for Roman Anthony right now. As far as being forced to or having to give up one of your prized prospects, you may not have to go beyond just giving rather not prospects, your major league talent. You may be able to, Dan Ball, convince a team that enough prospects with some, you know, not exactly a premium price is enough to get the talent you need for your bullpen or your lineup without having to say farewell, Duran, or, you know, adios, Abreu.
Yeah, I appreciate Paul's call, but he's largely incorrect on both fronts there. You don't just have to give up Duran or have to give up one of your top three prospects. The Red Sox still have a very deep farm system. They just reorganized everything, and Franklin Arias is in there, Peyton Tolley, the left-handed pitcher, Connelly Early, another they have solid up-and-coming prospects that are there to be dealt. And honestly, other than, and Fitzy, I want to hear your answer on this. Other than Roman Anthony, Garrett Crochet, and Alex Bregman, I'll put those three together, and probably Carlos Narvaez because I'm a huge fan. Is there anybody who you would slam the phone down if another team was calling about them off the major league roster?
The fact that Meyer can't get through a season healthy sometimes makes me wonder if somebody just absolutely blew the doors open and then in the process it knocked my socks off. Like, I'd take the call. But no, I wouldn't humor anything on Crochet, Anthony, or the value of St. Bregman and the leadership factor that he brings to the team. After that, I'd listen to anyone and anything.
You can't,
pardon my double negative, Ted, but you can't not at least take the call at this point.
No, I agree. No, I absolutely agree. So, particularly if it gets a two or three starter.
Right.
You know, if you get a pitcher that's, worthy of a, you know, kind of a two or a three, then you got something right there. So that would be the position that I would be willing to trade more of my assets for than maybe say a right-handed bat or an end of the rotation guy.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number if you want to jump in on the conversation or send us a text and share your thoughts digitally with WEEI Afternoons on all things Red Sox. Their 2-out-of-3 series win against the Twins, the trade deadline coming up, and so much more. Thank you for joining us on the Odyssey app on 93.7 FM, WEEI, WEEI.com and beyond. We're going to pay a couple of bills, and when we come back, we'll get a little bit deeper into this trade deadline and the teams that are possibly listening, the players that could potentially be available, and so much more, including one who throws the ball real hard and just got a good look at the Red Sox at Target Field himself. You're listening to Dan Ball, Big Ted Johnson, and Nick Fitzy Stevens right here on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI, New England Sports Original. You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
the wild card team with the best chance to make a big move? The Boston Red Sox. Sandy Alcantara could be in play for the Red Sox. They've been playing with a lot of energy ever since the Rafael Devers trade, and I believe that for a variety of reasons, Sandy Alcantara or another starting pitcher of that level could be the key piece that gets the Red Sox to and through some playoff rounds in the American League this October.
I was today years old when I realized all this time I've been mispronouncing his name. Here I've been like a common baseball plebeian saying Sandy Alcantara, when of course I should be saying Sandy Alcantara. Sounds so much more exciting when you say it that way.
I'm still good with your first one, though. No shade to John Morosi. He's a great reporter, but that felt very out of place for the rest of that sentence.
That just reminds me, like, when you're watching the local news and someone comes on, good evening, and you're watching the Fox local news. I am Eugenio Suarez. Like, just give us your name. Speaking of which, by the way, that might be the most difficult name that I've heard more people on talk radio and television butcher than the third baseman for the Arizona Diamondbacks, one of the hotly mentioned names swirling around the trade mill these days, Eugenio Suarez. Four teams linked to him, none of them being the Red Sox as well at this time, although our friend from the Major League Baseball Network, John Morosi, there on the rejoin, saying that Sandy Alcantara could possibly be a target for the Red Sox. This is a guy Bradfo told us last week, sure, he's looked better of late, but you're coming off of you had a bad season, coming off of the TJ surgery, dinged up a little bit earlier this year. That one doesn't sound so much like a sure thing to me. Unless the Red Sox have a little more intel, fellas, on how he's feeling, if they've got a look at the medicals, or they want to take a flyer on someone who could be Cy Young level down the stretch for them as well, I would understand, and that probably would be a prospect-laden blockbuster or blockbuster-adjacent deal for the Red Sox. But, man, before that happens, I would feel better about something like, you know, Zach Gallen. Merrill Kelly is just, you know, right down the middle. Mitch Keller, we've talked about. Dan, the closer, obviously, as well from the Pirates. And, you know, if anyone's listening and the Rays want to get frisky, the Yandy Diaz move, I know that would cost a lot, but man, wouldn't he look good in a Sox uniform.
I am all in on Yandy Diaz, personally. The swing fits Fenway well. He hits extremely well at Fenway. He plays first. He's played a little bit of third. He is mainly a DH with the Rays because his first defense isn't incredible, but as has been stated a lot this year, your bar for good first base defense is pretty low. So he gives you a top four bat in your lineup. I think he slots in pretty well as your cleanup hitter behind Duran with the current alignment of your lineup. And he solves something, Ted, that just kind of bugs me on a playoff team. Your platoon at first base is something that I would rather not see the Red Sox go forward with. I think he gives you something that's absolute, something that's certain at first base, and that has been your biggest rotational spot other than second
so
far this season.
What is it about that first base? I just like the...
It's become the new drummer for Spinal Tap.
Is that what it is? I just like having like a stud there. Like just a...
Yeah, right.
Someone that you just kind of just know is always going to be a steady defensive player, you know, that can can hit the snot out of the ball. You're right. They just haven't forever had any stability at that position. Look, the guy's a monster. He feasts on the Red Sox too. The guy's he just looks like the kind of guy you want on this team. So I look, right-handed bat too, right? So he's that's a need. So I hadn't even heard his name. Are we just pulling names out of our butt? Is this being linked to a
this came up a couple weeks ago. Fitzy, Chris Cotillo was the first to report about it in Mass
Robert
Live.
Murray, correct.
And so now within the hour, Robert Murray from The Athletic has said that not only is he a name that's being linked, but the Rays are now listening on him. So that is a significant difference. And as much as we've heard, Fitzy, that the Red Sox have been very high on him if he does hit the market.
Yeah, so Ted, that tells me that's one of those, we don't feel the need to move him. He's not out front with a for sale sign. But if you want to knock on the door and make one of those, like, how much would it cost to get you to move out of this house and let me buy it type of deals? Then I think the Rays would listen if the Red Sox went calling. And it's always tough to deal within your division as well. But man of war, when we've just been crying and begging for the Red Sox to try to find a powerful right-handed bat and end our long-suffering regional nightmare that has been first base. Yes, I know Romy, my homie, went yard today, and Toro's been hanging in as well. Yeah. But Yandy Diaz on the season. I'm not sure who your top target is, Ted, but to me, 282, 18 ding-dong, 62 RBIs, 115 hits. He's 33 years old, so you're not paying for somebody who's 25 with like years of upside to go. Rather, you're looking for a dependable veteran who can come in, mash right now, and I think he would be an awesome fit at Fenway.
Agreed. I mean, you give me that OPS and that average, please. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? All day, man.
Okay, let's grab one more call before we hit the top of the hour and weave a little football into the fabric of the afternoon show. Joe has been waiting patiently in Lincoln, wants to talk a little trade deadline with the boys. How are you, Joe?
Hey, I'm doing okay, guys. But I've kind of changed my mind as I've been at home. My first thought was, look, the clubhouse chemistry is great. These are young guys developing. Roman Anthony's been a big difference. Well, do we really have to make some huge, significant deal trading away anybody that we really want to keep from the Red Sox? I don't. I see them getting better at fielding and running. They're just getting better.
Joe, I'm going to have to let you go. Unfortunately, your phone is kind of...
Do you want to tell him? Do you want to tell him, Fitzy, or you want me to tell Joe what's
ahead.
Up?
You take this one, Ted.
Here's the thing, Joe. I hear what you're saying. You don't want to trade anybody that you don't want to trade to bring in somebody that might not work great with the chemistry. If you don't make a trade, the team chemistry will all of a sudden start having cracks in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to for folks to understand the collective mindset of a baseball team when they feel like they're hot and they're they have momentum and they have a chance to do something and go to the playoffs, and that said team does not do anything at the trade deadline. I've seen teams fall apart mentally, and so that's the concern to not do anything. And I think it's a stronger concern than it would be worrying about, you know, who you sent away. And chances are it's probably prospects and guys that aren't even on the big club. So it's a non-factor in my opinion.
All right, real quick before we hit the break and flip the script to the 5 o'clock hour, Mike in the car has a blockbuster he wants to float by us real quick. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, this one's tough, Fitzy, but if you really think this team wants to be a legitimate World Series contender, you mentioned Yandy Diaz, that'd be a great piece for them to add, but would you consider trading Marcelo Meyer for Joe Ryan and Johan Duran to Minnesota?
Yep, 100%.
Ooh, Mike!
I'll drive him myself. I'll drive him to Logan myself.
Ted, could you pull the trigger?
You know, I'd have to. I wouldn't hang up the phone. I'd have to say, can I call you back and talk to a couple of my advisors?
What if they said you can't call us back? You got 5 minutes.
Let me at least talk to my advisors. Can I put you on hold then? Because that's a tasty one.
That's a big one.
That's a tasty one, man. I'd have a hard. It's the fact that I can't give you a definitive answer tells you. That would be a difficult. Marcelo, man, golly. He's flashed. Clearly, he's flashed.
Yep.
What some of you guys are concerned about is him getting hurt. He's got a history of getting hurt. But that's tough, man. I'd have to seriously think that one through.
Yeah, for a plus-level starter, a guy that could fill in if Crochet ever goes down, because we know he's going to get a couple extra days rest now, load management in the back end of the final third of the season, and also a guy that can come in, I don't know, Dan, coming out of the bullpen, throwing 101. I'm taking that call, and yeah, Ted, if they say you got 5 minutes, I'm definitely calling. I'm telling the advisors, get in here, you idiots. That'd be, oof, geez, Mike, wow, throwing that grenade in the room before we got to catch a break. How about that? All right, well, there's one to think about, Red Sox fans. If you have any giant Mike-sized level trade proposals you want to throw our way, it's trade deadline eve, and we are here for all of them at 617-779-7937. Coming up, 5 o'clock, it's time to talk a little football. It was day 7 at Pats Camp 2025 down in Foxborough. A few players flashed once again, and a couple of guys are beginning to, as Joe Namath used to say, struggle a little bit. We'll get to the highs and lows of day 7 from Mike Vrabel's first camp as head coach of the New England Patriots when WEEI Afternoons returns.
Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI. Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
This hour of Afternoons is brought to you by FindMassMoney.gov.
Well, the key to leadership is your how you relate to people, and can people trust you? And I think he has that relatability factor, but he also has the football knowledge, and he's brought a team of people with him who are on the same agenda, and that's the key. So hopefully we have a good year here.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
5 o'clock hour here on WEEI Afternoons. Thank you so much for joining us, however you happen to be taking in the program on the radio, the theodysseyapp.com, or, of course, any of the video platforms like YouTube Live and, of course, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Nick Fitzy-Stevens here on the comm alongside Big Ted Johnson and the ballgame Dan Ball sliding over into the third chair with us here for the remainder of the afternoon. That, of course, was Patriots owner Robert Kraft on this morning's edition of the Up and Adams show on everyone's favorite TV station, FanDuel TV. Quick question. Anyone know how to get FanDuel TV?
No clue.
I don't, but when you turn it on, Ted, I think you're going to hear somebody giggling.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know if you noticed that, Fitzy.
What was that about?
Well, you know what? Can we play that cut again? I think it's worth playing again.
Yeah.
Now listen to the question. Okay, it's Kay Adams asking Robert Kraft about Vrabel and what it Kraft thinks about Vrabel and his leadership and what it takes to be a good leader. And then listen to how Kay Adams responds to it, and then let's talk about it. Go ahead. Let's play it again,
Well, the
Brian.
Key to leadership is your how you relate to people, and can people trust you? And I think he has that relatability factor, but he also has the football knowledge, and he's brought a team of people with him who are on the same agenda, and that's the key. So hopefully we have a good year here.
What's all the giggling? What was Robert Kraft saying that was so doggone funny, Fitzy?
Is she just having so much fun? Is she watching something in the background, like Jalen Polk trying to make a catch?
Well, it's obvious.
To block Keon White?
To me, it's obvious.
What do you got?
It's almost as if she was asking the question, and then when she hears Kraft's response, feeling as if she's taking a dig at Bill Belichick. When she says leadership is about trust and trusting people and relatability, it's like, why would you laugh other than she feels as if Kraft is taking a dig at Belichick by pumping up Vrabel. That's the only way I can interpret that.
Is this the latest chapter? Is this still going to go on? Is this proverbial rhymes with missing match between Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick going to go on ad infinitum, Ted, until either they have a face-to-face and break bread once again and figure it out, or until one of them passes? Because, she's now laughing about the fact that, Robert Kraft may be using Mike Vrabel as the vessel to take thinly veiled shots at the previous coach. It's
never going to end. No. You understand.
It is it.
You know why? Because they've extended the olive branch to each other with some reluctance and hoping that, okay, well, you're not gonna burn me if I take the olive branch. And oh, sure enough, they do. Like they set each other up. You know, they kind of, Kraft got Bill to, come to an event and so he could basically say thank you for all you've done.
Yeah.
And it was
because it's a public event, right?
Right.
Because I get the upper hand by inviting you to X event and saying
whether
all
it's
these
Tom
nice things
Brady
about
night,
you.
The roast of Tom Brady with the shot glasses that Gronk threw down on the ground and it went into someone's eye.
And then
all these things.
And then Kraft goes on somewhere and says something that offended Bill.
Yep.
And then Bill goes on and says something that's going to offend Kraft.
The whole risk thing was there. So, remember the last one? I took a risk by hiring Bill. Well, I took a risk by coming to the Patriots. No, I was a bigger risk.
They can't stop picking at the scab.
Crazy.
They'll never. So to answer your question, Fitzy, Belichick-Kraft feud, they're babies. They're like emotional babies, and they'll never grow up, and they're insecure, and they got big egos, and this is the way it's going to be until the end of time.
And I think, I hate to say it, but we in the media and people looking for a new spark, a thread, etc. every day are technically, with air quotes, duly intended, the winners here. But I feel like Pats fans are the losers in what has been, by and large, Dan, a very optimistic, hopeful, positive, minus whenever Andy Hart talks about the offensive line.
Well,
Patriots training camp thus far to date, like, hey, Drake May's grown up in front of our eyes. Steph Diggs, better than advertised. This defense is going to ball out. Even with things like, what's up with Carlton Davis and how's Gonzo's hammy and what did Polk say today? It's been a largely positive offseason and summer for all things Pats Nation. And then we stir this crap up again, and it's like, oh, why didn't you just leave the hornet's nest alone by the garage?
Well,
my head coach is a pain in the tush.
That's probably fair.
Come on.
That's fair, A, but B, Fitzy, you're right, and it's so petty. I mean, you guys, I'm staring through the glass.
Operative word, Dan.
I'm staring
petty.
Through the glass at a poster on the back wall that says six rings. It's two fists with a bunch of championship rings around it. That's because the Patriots did more winning than any other team ever within that span. And now, 5 years removed from that, or whatever it is at this point, you have a quarterback who can barely stand his coach or his owner, an owner who can't stand his coach, a coach who can't stand his owner, and it's sullying how people think about this era of football, as I sit here talking to a member of the Patriots. It sullies an era of Patriots football that was better than anything that we've seen in the history of sport, but these guys just can't leave well enough
alone. The most frustrating part is just the posturing and the inauthenticity.
Yeah.
It's just no one says what they really mean. There's a lot of passive aggressiveness. And so people, you know, if you don't like each other, just say you don't like each other. It's just like, as opposed to acting like you do and then giving these subtle little digs, passive aggressive digs that tell all of us that are in that really understand what's going on, you know, what how you really feel. So I just wish, if you don't like each other, just be honest about it, you know. And Brady makes you think that he loved Bill Belichick and they had the best relationship. No, they don't. But if you talk to him today, he would say that they do, which is, it's misleading. It confuses people. And it's honestly, it's not the truth. And I wish more of the truth came out about what really went on down there.
Yeah, the way Tom Brady always says, no coach I'd rather have had or have played for. I'm sure there were a couple of times you probably thought otherwise. And when Belichick does the whole, like, you know, I've said always a no other quarterback I would have wanted. Oh, really?
Please.
Oh, so you just drafted Garoppolo just to inspire Tom, just to light a fire under his ass.
And you pushed him out. Right?
Yeah, you shoved him out the door when he still had, plenty of gas left in the tank when he was shown the door as well. We're happy to take your calls here in the 5 o'clock hour on WEEI Afternoons on all things Red Sox as the trade deadline looms. And, of course, Patriots camp, the feud between Belichick and Kraft as those embers still burn, and of course other things related to Mike Vrabel, Drake May, and more. Let's jump on the line with Randy in Providence. Randy, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing good, bro.
So moving back to the positive stuff, I don't know if you guys caught the Caden Wallace talking to the press today, and they were asking him about the transition of guard, and he said, you know, when he gets caught up, one of the guys he goes to is Jared. Meaning Jared Wilson, who's the third-round rookie picked up this year. And, I mean, he was – one of the things coming in was, like, he was inexperienced in college. So I think, you know, it shows not only great promise for the rookie, it's a little worrying on the Caden Wallace side of things, I think, where, you know, you're going to an inexperienced rookie and that guy's, you know, acting as a tutor to you.
Right.
It kind of shows where you are, but – I think it's very promising. You know, center is often, I think, an underrated spot on the line in terms of importance. And I think that having the young guy, Jared Wilson, come in, even if he starts at left guard this year and then moves over to center next year, or, you know, maybe later on in the year or whatever. But having those three guys, him, the tackle, and the quarterback all being able to develop together is going to be really great for this team long term.
Appreciate the call, Randy. Thanks very much. Yeah, Ted, one of the many different storylines now 7 days in, of course, this is day three of pads. They had one day off on Sunday before things kicked it up a notch in a different gear. Has been Jared Wilson is emerging as quite, I would say, a fascinating storyline and potentially one of the more dynamic ones as camp rolls on. And now here we are a week and a half out or 9 days away from the first and only preseason game at Gillette, which also happens to be Brady statue night on August 8th. And we'll talk to our friend Megan Ottolini. Mego checking in at 5:30 today as she's been part of the Six Rings crew down there observing Patriots camp in person. Ted, you were down there a couple of times now as well. Jared Wilson is getting way more run on this offensive line than I think anybody anticipated. Across the line, left guard, right guard, and center, I'm starting to think that there's a big, bright future ahead for this guy, or does that speak to the fact that the offensive line is struggling and they're scrambling early?
No, I don't think so.
Long question, good question.
I don't think so, man. I think what it really kind of tells you more than anything is that maybe they know what they're doing in scouting, right? I mean, how many guy times have they gone and gotten mid-round linemen that never work out, like time and time again? So, yeah, hey, good. If Jared Wilson works out, that's great. What makes me excited is that they maybe hit on a guy, and not only hit on a guy, that maybe they got a guy that should have gone a round or two higher in the third round, because there was a lot of people that thought that the Patriots got a steal with him. You know, they say that about Barmore. I have yet to really see that out of Barmore, I'll be honest with you. But they just really haven't been on their, you know, kind of, when it comes to scouting, they haven't been good recently. So that's what I'm encouraged about, is to hear potentially with Jared Wilson that they might have actually, you know, got a steal. But the versatility he brings is clearly something that is attractive to him. What I'm told, I was listening to a cut from Milton Williams the other day, and he basically said that the kid's got an excellent base. All right, he doesn't get knocked back on his heels very. He's got a really good foundation and really good base, so that when these guys get up under him, he doesn't fall off balance and get pushed around. So I think it's great. It's great news for the Patriots that they maybe got a guy that they could be a steal potentially in this draft.
And Fitzy, it couldn't be happening at a better time as well, as we talk about Bradbury going off with an injury. There's been, you know, a lot of questions at the right tackle position. Morgan Moses went off the field. I think Vrabel described it as like an evaluation day or something like that. Yeah. So as you've had some of these veterans that are kind of either falling off or having slower starts to camp than you would hope for, you're getting a young guy who's moving his way up. And let's, you know, quantify the bad with the good. There's been a couple times where he's, you know, put the ball on the ground, a couple of bad snaps, either high, low, or what have you. But that's going to come as a rookie. He played all along the interior up until his senior year at Georgia. So to see that kind of rise this quickly into camp, you have to love that.
Yeah, but here, I think that, yes, you do. And the fact, Ted, that the scouts may have gotten it right in this regard, and that you could find a diamond in the rough. And holy smokes, this kid could be starting, and he's a third rounder. I mean, you were there back during the transition from Damian Woody to Dan Copen as well. And Damian Woody was the guy that he was the star. He was the stud. He moves on. Copen transitions in. And no, who would have thought that he was going to turn out to be the near decade long standout that he was for the team as well. Saw that he visited Pat's camp yesterday. Good for him. Things are going in the right direction. But do you think that hitting on Jared Wilson potentially is going to mitigate the frustration some fans are feeling now as Will Campbell, Ted, continues to
please,
you know what I mean? Like struggle
before
a
you
bit?
Finish the question. No, no.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you. Good.
No, if Will Campbell is you know significantly less than what we thought, I think people are going to be upset. But I say that, and then I think, what were the options at four? I mean, what were the realistic options? Were there a lot of people hoping that Gentry would be the guy? I don't know. Like,
what about Tyler Warren?
Tyler Warren. Me, I like Tyler Warren. I mean, he didn't go till like 13 or 14, so I don't know.
Simmons, who all the reports are is the kid out of Ohio State that had the questions around the character, Ted, that's crushing it for Kansas City.
But you know what I mean? Like, say there was, I mean, there really wasn't a clear cut kind of other two or three players. That was the thing. It's like they got to the top four and then it fell off until 15. And so, how will people look back at the Patriots? I think a lot of people will go like, well, I probably would have gotten taken the tackle too. And so, you know, it just unfortunately it didn't work out. Look, if it doesn't work out at tackle, my guess is he's going to be kicked down to guard and he's going to be a 10-year guard. So I'm not worried about him not working out. I am worried about him maybe potentially not working out at tackle though.
Yeah, that could – I know. And like, look, as Cole Strange supposedly has struggled a little bit as well, and Mego will update us on that in just about 10 minutes time. Sure, if Will Campbell becomes the next great guard, phenomenal. That's awesome. We get Logan Mankins. We get another Mahler on the interior that rocks and rolls with the run, with the rushing offense. That's great. But like the left tackle issue, Ted, that's been, what do you think has been an unsolvable equation longer? First base for the Sox or left tackle for the Pats?
Well, yeah. What's Trent Brown? I mean, how long ago was Trent Brown? I mean, that
seven
was
years ago.
Was this 7 years ago? No.
The 2018 season was 7 years ago, yeah.
Well, that's the last time Trent Brown's been here? Okay. I mean,
well, when he played left tackle, he switched to right tackle and barely played. He played okay, left well, tackle just a handful of games.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Then probably the Patriots. But yeah, I get your point. It's just, you know, and we are used to during the dynasties, we had left tackles that went there and didn't move, right? So,
yep.
So it is frustrating. But you know, there's the caller before made a good point in just saying kind of like Jared Wilson. What I do like is that what I want more than anything is young guys to grow up with, mm-hmm. with Drake May. I want a young left tackle. I want young wide receivers. I want young linemen, young running backs to be, you know, young and growing up with Drake May. I played on offenses where, you know, the quarterback and the receivers played a long time together. Troy Brown was here for 15 years. Guys got comfortable with each other. And so I want these young guys to show out and play with Drake May as long as that is possible.
Let's grab one more quick Patriots call before the break. Mego joins us in just 10 minutes time with a thorough Pats camp day 7 report. Let's head up to the 207. Sam's up in Maine. What's up, Sammy?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great show. How I wish you? I could hear in the morning. That's okay. Pretty good. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. What's on your mind today, my guy?
Okay. So, as fans, should we be disappointed if the Patriots do not make the playoffs this year? In other words, given the addition of the new coach in Vrabel and our draft picks and everything we've done in the offseason, should we be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs? Is that where we're at? I kind of want to ask you guys that. Or do we just let the season play out and see how it goes?
Appreciate the call, Sam. I'll go first and just let's whip it around the room before we catch a commercial break. No, I wouldn't be disappointed if the Patriots don't make the playoffs for two reasons. One, win at least double the games that you did last year, whether you want to be like Andy and say, well, that means you need to win six because you shouldn't have won the last game. I say 8 to 9 wins would be a massive success because that means, and this is the grander point, the turnaround is official. The turnaround is underway. You know, Mike Vrabel spoke earlier today, as he as so often does at Pat's camp, and he was talking about the fact that days are good and days are bad, and players are, most importantly, growing, learning, and making progress together. That's what I need this season. Playoffs? Playoffs, they'd be great. Sure, I'd love meaningful football in December into January. Forget February. Come on now, folks. But, like, That would be something special. But to see the Patriots actually looking in the right direction, going with what you said, Ted, growing and learning together, that's all I can ask for out of the season.
Well, yeah, you just trend positive. Let's see a professional operation out there. Let's see a competent football team. Let's see Drake May take a big step. Let's see buy-in. You know, and they might do the best with the abilities that God gave them, and it's not enough. That's just the way it is. To me, it's not about playoffs or bust. It's give me 8+ wins. Drake May shows he's a legit franchise quarterback. And just positive signs that this organization has left a lot of its old, bad habits behind them. So that's how I'll look at it. I won't look at it just black or white. Did they make the playoffs or didn't they make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think you guys both kind of nailed it. There's not much more to add. It's the individual growth. It's feeling good about where you're at going into next offseason, where you can hopefully continue to spend and continue to churn, because I know that, the number was near 50% that Mike Reese said in terms of roster turnover year over year. You needed even more than you did, given just the depths that this organization had sunk to. So you take positive steps. You have the new coaching staff identify who they can build around and who's just an extraneous piece from a former regime, and you continue to go. And I think 2026 is really your year where it should be truly on the radar. But, I mean, hey, if you fall ass backwards into 8-9 wins, a wild card spot, then you certainly take it. But it's not really a focus of mine.
You know where I would be disappointed? I hear you. I think we're being fair.
Their schedule is horrible this year. It is horrible.
If they have, it is horrible. So you're saying they should, okay, So, go ahead, Brian. Chime in. You think they should? They should
misuse of the Homer
make the
horn.
They should be right there. They should be 10, maybe even 11 wins. You looked up and down their schedule.
Oh my god!
It is horrible. This is not an indictment. This is not an indictment on the team. I don't think the Patriots are that much better of a team than they were last year. I think they got some more pieces. I think coaching wise, they're going to be a lot better. Their schedule is awful. Their wins, to quote Tom Curran yesterday, there are wins all over the schedule.
Real quick, for Zoko, how would you rank the Patriots in the AFC East? What's the best?
They should be second. It's Buffalo's the clear favorite, but I think the Jets kind of suck, and Miami's going to take a step back.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one, but 10, 11 wins.
That's where the Homer horn is supposed to come in there, Brian. Just
that's
to
my
properly
ceiling,
use it.
Holy smokes, Brian! Jeez,
you guys are giving them the out. Oh, if they win 8 games, that's such a successful season.
It is.
8 wins, 9 wins. Oh, great job! You guys won 9 games. They have a horrible schedule.
I got them winning 9.5 games right now, and so by my math, they are a playoff team. But I'm saying if they don't make it, I'm not going to be disappointed if X, Y, and Z happen and look the way I want it to look.
If they're in those games, Ted, if they don't get their doors blown off, if you don't have games like last year when they played Miami and it was 34-0 at the half, and there was no reason to watch the second half, you know, the spitting of the bit in years past with Mac Jones and Moore and the reverse engineered offense of Patricia, if you just see a professional, competent football team, and maybe, just maybe, some of that wizardry we've been hearing about from Josh McDaniels as he and Drake May ultimately and hopefully Neuralink to get this offense rolling. 617-779-7937. Let's get more on training camp today. Day 7 in Foxborough from our pal Mego. Megan Ottolini joins the show in just a couple minutes. But first, it is our duty to catch you up on everything trending in Boston sports and beyond. So for that, here's Dan Ball.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network. And those Red Sox beat the Twins 13-1 to complete the series victory this afternoon out in Minnesota. Brian Bayo had Kay Adams chuckling and giggling as he went 7 innings, giving up 1 run to win his 7th game of the season. The Sox hit 4 home runs in the victory. They complete the 12-game run from the All-Star break to the trade deadline with a record of 6-6. Off day tomorrow for Boston, they open up a 3-game series against the Houston Astros on Friday. Garrett Crochet will not pitch on Friday, manager Alex Cora said earlier today, per Tim Healy. They will push him back to either Monday or Tuesday as part of their bigger picture workload management. The MLB trade deadline is on Thursday at 6 p.m., just about 24 hours away. The latest news from around the league, the Reds are acquiring third baseman Cabrian Hayes from the Pirates. The Yankees traded for outfielder Austin Slater from the White Sox to attempt to fill the void left by Aaron Judge's injury. The Braves acquired veteran reliever Tyler Kinley from the Rockies. The Angels acquired veteran relievers Luis Garcia and Andrew Chafin from the Nationals. The Mariners are acquiring reliever Caleb Ferguson from the Pirates. And a big one for Rafael Devers' team, the Giants are acquiring Jose Budo, Drew Gilbert, and Blade Tidwell from the Mets in a deal for right-handed reliever Tyler Rogers. The Patriots completed their 7th day of training camp. The team returns to the field tomorrow at 10 a.m. It is expected to be a walkthrough practice. And a few transactions made by the team today. The Patriots announced the signing of tight end Tyler Davis, tight end Cole Fotheringham, and center Alec Lindstrom. In addition, tackle Yasser Durant has been waived, and wide receiver Demir Blankensee and running back Travian Williams have been released. Want to win free groceries and epic Boston sports and concert prizes? Enter the Shaw's and Star Market Grand Slam Summer Sweepstakes. Just spend $50 or more and check your receipt for your entry code. It's that easy. Official rules at GrandSlamSummerSweeps.com. I'm Dan Ball. This is trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
You can stream the show or listen on demand anytime. Just download the Odyssey app.
That's AUDACY.
Save WEEI as a favorite and listen wherever you go. Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
How would you describe your conversations with Joe Mazzulla and what have you enjoyed?
Joe's fantastic. I mean, I appreciate him, just from the time that I got here, reaching out. You know, we're probably different personalities, and I think that that's probably the thing I appreciate most about him. He's always trying to learn and gain knowledge different ways about building a team, about strategy, about scheme, about inspiring players to do their job better. So I always love my conversations with him, and I'm excited that he could come out here with his son today. His son's a football player, Zavarian, outside linebacker.
Coach Mike Vrabel today. That was Mike Vrabel hotline right now about Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla being in the house. Mega was also in the house for day 7 of Pat's Camp 2025, and she joins WEEI Afternoons now with Big Ted Johnson, Dan Ball, and your old pal Fitzy here. Mega, you get one word to describe day 7, day 7 overall, day 3 with pads on. What would it be?
Sweaty. Today was so much sweatier than yesterday. I was prepared for yesterday to be this crazy hot day, but it felt like we didn't have a single breeze all throughout practice today. So, you know, it's very strenuous for me.
So, okay, sweaty day overall. It was, yeah, people, you know, the heat was pretty legit. We're closing out July on a swastastic heat wave. What was, as far as the compete level goes, who stood out? Who's the first person who stood out for either the right or wrong reasons on either side of the ball for you?
I think, unfortunately, I'll go with the wrong reasons first, and that'll be Will Campbell. He's going to be the subject of a lot of debate over the next couple of days, as he will through the rest of training camp, because he's the fourth overall pick, and you're slotting him in there to be a starting left guard, left tackle, rather, kind of no matter what. And today, in his 1v1 drills, Braden Swinson got past him at one point, and then he struggled in one of the team competitive periods early, going up against Chasen, who has been a free agent that they picked up, who's really excelled this week as they've gotten into pads. I think with Will Campbell, it's just he has a microscope on him and a magnifying glass, and he's going to be riding this roller coaster of training camp attention, where it's not just day to day, how is he looking, but really rep to rep. And some of that even just comes down to drills when they're not in competitive team drills, because everyone wants to know how prepared is he going to be when he goes into week one.
A bag of suck.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Okay, there you go.
That was out of context.
Yeah, as a lot of Brian's great drops often are. I guess to stick on the same area of the roster, a lot made so far of Jared Wilson. What's been your takeaway of him through his first week of camp?
Yeah, it seems like everybody absolutely loves him, from the coaching staff down to Caden Wallace today, who used an expletive in a happy way to describe his play. They've been moving him around a little early on the line. They had him taking a couple, snapping the ball a couple times to Drake May. And I will say that's one other thing that has consistently been a bit of an issue for this offensive line, is executing that exchange with Drake May. And it's not just Jared Wilson. It has been Garrett Bradbury, who we did not see today. Ben Brown was a little bit better today when he was at center. But Jared Wilson, I think he's gotten an early chance to jump up to the ones at left guard, and that might be where they want to put him.
Megan, Andrew Callahan, Doug Kide, and some others have said that they thought today's practice for Drake May was maybe one of his better practices. How would you sum up his day and his so far his camp?
I think so far his camp has been really positive, and I would agree that today looked like he was connecting really well with his pass catchers, wasn't afraid to take the check down, and I mean that in a good way. I think that the way that he's been able to move through his progressions and not just take off and run. We all remember last year, it was like, okay, the Patriots' greatest weapon offensively is Drake essentially ducking down and running for as many yards as he can. I think Josh McDaniels is focused on pushing him to be the kind of passer who, when he takes off the run, he's still looking to be a passer. And the connections that he had, especially with Stephon Diggs, definitely his number one target, but also a beautiful go route that that Kyle Williams had down in the end zone. Just Drake had a perfect pass to him. And I think that overall, it feels like he's really building chemistry with a lot of these guys beyond just Pop Douglas, and Kayshon Booty, who he flashed a little bit of that with last year.
Megan Ottolini from WEEI and WEEI.com and the Six Rings podcast joins us after day 7 of Patriots training camp outside of Gillette. So as far as the receivers go, Mego, Pop Douglas does look like he's having a breakout camp and finally getting to a comfortable place and has a terrific chemistry with Drake May. Diggs looks like he's stacking one good day after another. How about the rest of the guys, and who would you say is like emerging to possibly be that number two, and who looks like they could be fighting for a job and maybe possibly on the outs?
So I think fighting for the job is the easier question to answer because it's such a crowded room towards the bottom. The number two receiver is the much more interesting question to me. Is that just going to be Pop and he's going to be a slot receiver and that's your number two behind Stephon Diggs? Because Stephon Diggs is the clear number one. Mm-hmm. Or are you hoping that Kyle Williams takes the jump some point early in the season, partway through the season, to be that true number two? Because I'm not sure, looking around outside of those two guys, that there is somebody who is going to emerge that way. I love a lot of things that Kayshon Booty brings to the table, but he has been with this team for a couple years now and has still not completely clicked. Now, maybe with the Josh McDaniels offense, he will click, and he's having a pretty good camp so far. If you ask me right now, I would say that I think he's on the roster. But when you get further down that depth chart, Kendrick Bourne, Javon Baker, Efton Chisholm, once Mac Hollins comes off the PUP list, I'm not sure of those guys down towards the bottom, and I'd push Kendrick Bourne down there based on the reps that he's taking. I'm not sure who gets that final spot and if it is somebody who can actually be a receiver versus somebody who's going to earn their way on through special teams.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time figuring that one out myself, Megan. All right, last question for us. You know, with Christian Gonzalez out for at least for the foreseeable future with a hamstring and limited participation by Carlton Davis, both starting cornerbacks are out. So now Alex Austin, Isaiah Bolden, Marcellus Dial have had to fill in. Just from the cornerback position and those guys filling in for those two players, who stands out? How do you kind of assess the cornerback situation currently?
Yeah, I've always been an Alex Austin fan. I like him, and I think that he provides nice depth there. Marcellus Dial Jr., I think, has gotten beaten a couple times in some of these competitive drills. What it comes down to for me is I'm very curious what they're doing with Carlton Davis, how much maintenance time they're giving him, because he has had he has been snake bitten with injuries in the past. He's only 28 years old. I mean, this is a guy who's not 31, 32. I'm curious to see how much of he's going to participate once we get into hosting the Commanders next week, once they go out to Minnesota in these extremely meaningful days. I look at the depth that they have at corner, and it's nice, but it's quite a drop-off compared to Christian Gonzalez and Carlton Davis. So I understand the priority is having those guys healthy. You need those guys healthy, but that's supposed to be your most talented unit, and we've barely seen them in camp now that Christian Gonzalez went out with that hamstring injury.
Competition in the cornerback room, a stacked wide receiver room full of question marks galore and issues along the offensive line, making for one intriguing camp, but at least Drake May's doing well, and Diggs is looking every bit the part of the alpha this team desperately needs.
May I say also quickly, Fitzy,
uh-huh.
Efton Chisholm had a very nice kickoff return today. Nice kickoff return.
Oh, thank you. You've just made my night, and it's not even 6 p.m.
I just want to let you know that. It was a bit of a moment for him today. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Love to hear that. It's nuggets like that are why we love having you on the show. You can give her a follow at Megan_Ottolini, read her at WEI.com, and of course, listen to the Six Rings and Football Things recaps every day from Pat's Camp. Mega, you're doing bang up work. Thanks so much for the time tonight.
Thanks, guys. Stay cool.
Talk to you later. That was Megan Ottolini joining us with some perspective from Pat's Camp Day 7 outside Gillette. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number with any final thoughts. We will be back with our final thoughts on the day. We call those odds and ends, and that's how we're going to wrap up WEEI Afternoons.
If you missed any part of the show,
or to have it delivered to your phone daily,
subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast on the Odyssey app
or wherever you find your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
You guys are both looking at me really weird.
No, go ahead.
Just tell me what's wrong.
Oh, this was Shime's lead yesterday.
Thank you for paying attention to my lead. Were you not paying attention?
She's a different person when she sits in that seat.
There's no way this is Shime's lead yesterday. What?
Are you getting ready to say that Bryce Harper cussed out Rob Manfred?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I didn't stop there, I swear. From the time I wake up to the time I lay down.
Been there.
You gotta watch yourself next show. You mess up a little bit, you're gonna get crushed.
I was gonna say, now who amongst
this show too, I guess.
Who among us has not ever accidentally take snaked a fellow cast member, repeated something from 5, 10, 15 minutes prior, or, you know, just made a human mistake? I mean, to err is human, correct, Ted?
Well, yeah. They're basically calling her out for not paying attention. But if I was in that one chair, I don't know if I would care what you guys were saying. I would just be worried about what I was going to say next. So I understand why Courtney maybe didn't know what Shime had said the day before. So it's okay, Courtney. Hold your head high.
That's right. Courtney was filling in on Monday for Greg in the one chair. And as Dan can attest, Andy, who's not with us today, but will be back tomorrow. And of course, I can vouch for as well. You always got a lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on, a lot of haps when you're in the one chair as well, between the opinionating, the aggregating, the commercial breaks, the live reads and the whatnot. And she did a fine job on Monday as well. But
I don't like butts.
OK. But also,
and
yes,
you cannot
well,
lie.
Well, there's that. Well, there's that, too. Courtney is a backyard accidental oil well of comedy gold and good takes and fun, and she's a sport about it all, and we appreciate her. But
I don't like pain, but spanking is nice.
Well,
I got to say, Brian Furzocco,
hey,
you must have like the VIP membership to the Stiz, Grimy, and WEEI Drop Club back there, guy.
The amount of Courtney drops in the system.
Is there a lot of Courtney drops?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think by far the most among any host.
Is it
Brian,
like
let's
Courtney
do, let's have a fun
sexual
game.
Innuendo drops? Like it's
oink,
almost like
it's, oink.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, let's play
Dirty Girl, huh?
Let's have three more. Let's play here in Odds and Ends. And, of course, that is the wrap of the show. Odds and Ends brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. They also accept donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's Cars with a K and carsforkids.org.
Pete Buttigieg.
There we go. Let's do a little more Courtney drop roulette. Give me two more randos.
Sweaty balls.
Oh. There we go. I want to say one thing before you play another drop. Real quick, I got to say, when you work in the morning,
yeah.
I've done morning radio.
Yep.
It's almost like you almost want to do a disclaimer before the show. I'll probably say something stupid.
I'm surviving for 4 hours. I'm barely awake.
I've put my foot in my mouth. One of the worst professional gaffes I've ever made was I was on the morning show.
Yeah.
And you're just not thinking as clearly, man. So, Courtney, hang in there, honey. Okay, go ahead. Play another drop there, Brian. Yeah.
Seven is
dominated
nuts,
the world,
though.
Seven? Seven works for Courtney?
Never
okay.
Know. Seven never
Fair
works.
Enough.
Okay.
I think we got Christian Arcand.
Oh, he's sitting right here. He's ready to go.
Big green bag in the studio.
You ever
it
do
must
morning
be
radio?
Arcand's with us.
Arcand, you ever do morning radio?
Oh, all the time.
Yes.
Feeling.
Oh, we don't have
a ton of morning radio. You can't tell your ass from your elbow at that hour in the morning.
That's true, but that's any time of day for me. And I think the main part of it for me is like my body in the morning, like my constitution
awful.
Is just completely off. You know what I mean? Like
no, yes,
that's one of those things where it like 7:30, you're like, now the rest of me's starting to wake up,
right.
And that becomes a problem. That's what I've always.
You'd be in the middle of your show. When a lot happens, that's no fun.
Yeah, yeah, you've been crushing coffee for the better part of, you know, two and a half hours, and there you go. Now you're awake.
So what do you got coming up tonight on the big Christian Arcand show? You got a little trade deadline primer, big guy?
Yes, we have a four-hour-long show tonight because of the Red Sox game. So back-to-back full shows. We'll have a preview of the deadline, and tomorrow probably an angry reaction to the deadline is how I'm expecting this will go. We'll have Tom King with a report from training camp. He wasn't as sweaty as Mego, I don't think, but that may be because he had fans on him or something, or just because he's so old he has no blood anymore. Either way, that's going to be...
His sweat glands may have dried up years ago,
It's entirely true. So that'll be coming around at 7:30. We will have the Arcand fire, all the normal good stuff. I don't know if you guys saw this, but for New England Nightly News, there is going to be a trash revolution on the streets of Boston. Have you guys seen this?
No.
These new trash cans?
No.
There's new trash cans. Mayor Wu putting the big push on to beat Josh Kraft. She's got these new trash cans that are going to cinch the election.
Perfect.
For her.
Perfect. That'll solve everything.
Oh, yeah.
Love that.
Yeah,
so that's coming up.
One of my favorite segments, by the way. Love those segments.
The Nightly News?
The Nightly News. Love it.
I got to let people know what's going on.
It's awesome.
Where else are you going to hear about the trash cans on the street?
Other than
keeping the peeps
news.
Informed. That's your job, and
that's
you do
right.
it well, big guy. All right, everybody, make sure you stay tuned for the Christian Arcand Show, 6 to 10 here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. Great job today behind the glass, Brian Furzocco, Danny Ballgame, Big Ted. Awesome work as always, boys. We will talk to you tomorrow. We got a full show from 2 to 6. Andy Hart will be back here on the comm. We'll have some reports from training camp as well. And, of course, trade deadline. Red Sox, come on, boys. Step up. Make something happen. Make the dream. Make the dream happen. Keep it alive. For your old pal, Nick Fitzy Stevens here on WEI Afternoons. Thanks for listening, everybody. It was a pleasure having you. And we will talk to you tomorrow from 2 to 6.
I tried to rub my junk in his face.
Moon over Parma, send my love to me tonight.
Yeah, don't know the rest. It's like a little Wet Willie I'm doing to myself.
Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.